Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. This is the Between the Ropes podcast. Brian Fritz, Michael Wiseman. We appreciate everybody for listening, for subscribing, for downloading the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, TuneIn app, Google Play, all the various places that you can
Caveman
find
fires.
The Between the Ropes podcast. Basically,
terrestrial radio.
I normally send out smoke signals every day to tell everybody when there's a new podcast.
Yeah, so. I do too. Do you see mine in Florida? Do you see mine?
Not always. I mean, I sometimes, you know, get a little sense that it could be yours, but by the time it gets to me, it kind of fades away a little bit. It might be a little gibberishy.
Oh yeah, or that might be my new vaping rig too. I don't know if that's actually
it could be. And by the way, anytime you're in your neck of the woods and you wonder why there's a pigeon coming close by, it's because I'm sending messages via pigeon as well.
I don't like the way you say your neck of the woods. I feel like that implies that everybody in North Carolina lives in backwoods somewhere. Like we're all just a bunch of backwoods rednecks drinking our moonshine. Woo, going to watch some NASCAR this weekend, peoples.
It's funny you put it that way because I thought you were going to take the neck part out of that as redneck rather than the woods part out of that, what I said. So I'm glad you took it the way you did.
Okay, yeah.
I guess. I don't know.
Well, we did establish a few podcasts back that you are, in fact, a racist. So, I mean, for what that's
worth. I am not a racist.
Okay, Brian Fritz.
Stop it, man. I am not a racist. Don't even try to start that, man. I don't need that kind of heat on me right now, man.
Cheap heat right there.
Hey, man, WrestleMania is coming to my city. I'm like the city host. I'm the spokesman for it, man. I don't need that kind of heat.
That's funny.
And remember, I think you are kind of hoping to get some certain kind of access to that big event, you know, maybe a credential that I could help you get
access. That's what I'm looking for.
Yes. From the C to the X.
That's right. Access for access. All right.
So, as we get going here, as what's customary.
What's customary?
I know you've got a frosty beverage.
Oh, I do. I do, in fact, have a frosty beverage. Here it is.
You've got your doo-a-ma-thinga to open it, as you call it.
My thingamajigger. I had to find my thingamajigger so I could open up the beer here. I do. I have my thingamajigger here. This is the Red Oak. It is fresh and pure, as the back of the label says. It is a Bavarian amber lager, unfiltered and unpasteurized for a rich, smooth taste. Rich and smooth, just like me.
Is it woodsy?
It is. There's an oak on the bottle, so it must be pretty woodsy as well. Backwoodsy. Tell y'all what. Now I'm going to drink this red oak. Okay, here we go.
Ah.
Nice. And cheers.
I'm sure you could taste the bark with the first sip.
It's good. This is a it bothers me a little bit that it's unpasteurized, but you have to keep it refrigerated. It is tasty. It's made right down the road here in Greensboro, North Carolina, or Burlington, North Carolina. So
what is it, like 11% alcohol?
It is not. It is only, I think it is approximately a 5.5%, maybe 6%.
6%. Yeah, that's right down the road.
Yeah, that's right down the road.
Well, I mean, when it comes to content of alcohol, that's normal, right?
Yeah. That's pretty normal.
Yeah, it's pretty normal. Middle of the road. So yeah, we got a lot of things to get to. We'll talk about Raw and SmackDown this week. Plus, we will preview Elimination Chamber, and we will get to your questions as well. Yes, we've thrown it out there on the TweetSphere that you can now contact us. So we're going back to the hashtag of AskBTR, or you can just tweet us straight at Between the Ropes, and we will get to some questions. You can also,
it is easier.
Yep.
It is easier if you use hashtag AskBTR, because when I go to compile these things, it is more challenging to just, you know, but do whatever way you can reach us. But questions,
in other words,
are back.
Michael does not want to do much work in compiling these, so please make it easy for him. You can also go to our Facebook page. We put up a post there. Go to facebook.com/between the ropes, and you can leave questions there too. It's just another place that Michael has to check out to compile the list of questions for the podcast.
When are we doing the email address? We just need the email address up and running. We need to work on that this week. We'll get it up.
I'll get that done. That's no problem. So I know one of the things we wanted to talk about, what we briefly referenced a week ago, but you finally got an opportunity to see it, was the ESPN 30 for 30 doc. This was the XFL. And you came away with that, and I couldn't tell if you were like a fan of it or not.
Why is that?
Just some of the comments that you made about it. I mean, and some of the mentions you made about a certain somebody that was involved in that project.
I think that was an incredible documentary, and hats off to ESPN for producing that, for putting it together. Fantastic work all the way around. I love the old clips. It brought me back to that era of sport, which was really weird. And then, of course, all of the comments by Dick Ebersol and what kind of went in behind the scenes to help building this with Vince McMahon. But it did highlight something for me. So basically, if you haven't seen it, go to the Watch ESPN app. If you have cable, you can check it out there. It's all over the place. One of the things that stood out to me, though, is a Vince McMahon, and it's going to sound like I'm getting ready to bash Vince McMahon. I have all the respect in the world for that man and the way he's kind of what he elevated, how he elevated the wrestling industry. But
I was going to say, here comes the but.
But he is definitely a promoter more than he is a creative. And it became very obvious to me during that documentary, the way Dick Ebersol talked about how the meetings with Vince McMahon felt like he never really had his idea of what it should be, right? He went out there and he advertised and he talked about how it was going to be what NFL used to be, what our fans really want. But it never really came together as a genesis of any real creative endeavor or something that was different than the NFL in some kind of special way. And I think that's – you see that in wrestling booking sometimes in WWE, but that's the way it felt with the XFL is it lacked – it was promoted great, had fantastic ads, had money, but – and it was obvious by the initial weekend ratings. That thing was a monster success because of the promotion, but the idea was never fully formed, and it never got to the place it needed to be. And I think that you see that in wrestling today.
Yeah, I mean, it got promoted fantastically well, like you said. It just couldn't live up to the promotion that they even gave it. If you remember that one ad, it's just like players running through fire, and the last thing was a wrecking ball taking out a guy. And people were wondering, like, okay, is this going to be like the ultimate kind of thing of violence when it comes to football? It wasn't just a throwback to, you know, previous years. It was going to be just, you know, violence and sex and TNA all over the place. And it could never live up to that. And it was never going to be like that on NBC, even like during the middle of the season when they were struggling for ratings and they were trying to turn to that. That was promoter Vince McMahon going back to the well for what had worked for him. And it was at a time that it worked for him when it came to him turning around WWF, because you know, they were struggling in the ratings. They had competition in WCW, and it was kind of, unchained at what he could do for wrestling. And that's where the Attitude Era came from. And he was trying to invoke the Attitude Era into football. He was already fighting the stigma of, is what they're doing on the up and up? And then the ratings were struggling. And what the football wasn't that good. Even the times when it was good, people didn't get to see it because they had different issues or games were just going long. I mean, they detail all of this in the documentary, including how they had the one great game and then the power went out. There was a couple of things.
That was my favorite story too. The power outage story, the second week when they have this fantastic game, but in the backhand, Jennifer Lopez is supposed to be on SNL live that night. And they're like, we can get this done in time. But then it goes into overtime. I was a nervous wreck watching that segment of the show.
Oh, I remember when that happened. And I remember hearing, like, you always heard that there were some very tense conversations between Dick Ebersol and Lorne Michaels, who runs Saturday Night Live. And I can only imagine what those have been like. But it's funny because, like, in this documentary, you know, they interviewed Vince McMahon, they interviewed Dick Ebersol, and the way that they did it was they had them each up on a stage separately. So, like, they had the big XFL graphic behind them. And there's one infamous scene during the documentary that I think told everything. And that, so there wasn't too much cursing on there, but there was some. And there was one scene where Dick Ebersol, they're talking about something and they kind of had this dramatic music and Dick Ebersol puts his face in his hands and just drops an F-bomb, like just kind of under his breath. And he just knew, like, he was reliving it. And it was like the moment he knew, like, oh my God, we're in trouble and how much money have we wasted and everything. And there were some things though that I had forgot about, like the blimp that they had fly over an NFL game and then it crashed. Yep. It's like, what?
But it was so indicative of what that show, what XFL was going to be, you know?
Yeah. So let me ask you this though, because at the end of it, they do this, this meeting between Vince and Dick Ebersol. It's the first time they've met in years and they're sitting around at Vince's favorite restaurant. Right. And they're swapping stories. And, you know, there's this really charming moment where Dick Ebersol says, hey, Vince, I still love you. You're still one of my best friends. If anything was going to happen to my kids, you know, I would definitely like leave them with you. And then they start talking about, it was like this really humanizing moment for Vince McMahon after everything that's gone on in this documentary. And then they start talking about, would you want to do it again? Could you see yourself doing something in football? And Vince leaves the door wide open on this, which I thought was really telling.
Well, he said specifically in the documentary, I think there's still a need for that now more than ever. And they did rightfully point to some of the areas where the NFL has taken ideas from the XFL. They talked about the mic'd up players we have nowadays. Definitely an idea that came from getting more input from the actual players in the field during gameplay, which I think is fantastic. The camera systems, the NFL definitely borrowed that. The presentation style, the NFL definitely took some of that and their ideas from the XFL. But he said those comments, and Dick Ebersol was like, yeah, you know, I have no idea what they're talking about. There is no need for an XFL or anything like an XFL in football today. It was weird, though. You're right, because the door was left wide open, and it seemed like he was still interested in going back there, but it would never work. It would never work.
Well, they were even talking about maybe doing some with coaches, and I was like, that's even a worse idea, I thought, because yeah. It's like, how many people are sitting there going, yeah, let me follow a coach around. Let me find out what's going on in a coach's life. I was like, I don't care. I mean, a lot of these coaches are working 20-hour days watching film for 18 hours of it. I'm like, that, you know, that's not too thrilling to me.
Yep. Interesting.
Okay, so let's get into the weekend WWE. So we had Raw, we had SmackDown.
We skipped the Super Bowl. Did you watch the Super Bowl?
Of course I watched the Super Bowl.
Did you watch it? Because I didn't watch the first half. I'm just going to be honest. I skipped the first half.
Did you really?
Yes.
Why?
Because first off, I could give two craps about the Falcons, a divisional rival with the Panthers.
Let me guess. You missed the first half because you went and saw La La Land again. And, you know,
first time. It was our first time seeing it. We picked out. We're like, who?
Wait a second. Am I right? You went and saw La La Land during the Super Bowl? Oh, my God.
Here's the series of events.
I didn't even know about that. I think I've admitted to something on here. I'll admit to it in a minute again, but okay. Go ahead.
We decided to go see it that evening. We said we don't really care that much about Super Bowl. It's a good time to go see it. The theater was dead. There was nobody there. I guess they're all home watching football. But yeah, we went and saw it, an evening showing, which was out by halftime. So basically, I came back home. We're only about 10 minutes from the theater, got home, watched the halftime show, and then got to see the good part of the game. But I sat in the theater and pulled up the score after the movie, and I was like, well, we haven't missed much. It's 28-0 or 21-0, whatever it was at that point. So
That's tremendous. You were watching La La Land.
My first half of football was better than your first half. La La Land was better than whatever was going on between the Falcons and Patriots for the first 2 hours.
And your quick review of La La Land?
Oh, my Lord. That movie was freaking amazing. It is not the kind of movie that a lot of our fans would like. It's a musical. It's got a little bit of that indie vibe to it, that indie spirit. You got to like musicals. You got to be romantic. But that movie, God, it touched me at my heartstrings.
It's whimsical, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It's whimsical. It's fun. It's sweet. It's genuine. It's a throwback. I love it to death. But it is not I wouldn't call it a pro wrestlers or a pro wrestling fans kind of movie.
I can't remember if I've mentioned it here on the podcast or where I mentioned it. Maybe it was on another podcast, but I will reiterate this here. Everybody knows I'm a big Star Wars fan. Mm-hmm. You are a big Star Wars fan.
Yeah.
We both have seen a Rogue One, Rogue One. Yeah. Okay. I've seen Rogue One once. I've seen La La Land twice.
Wow. But okay. Not to discredit La La Land, because I think that would be my favorite movie that came out in 2016 out of everything else. But no discredit to La La Land. But I thought Civil War was better than Rogue One. I even enjoyed, I'm not saying it is a better movie, but I enjoyed Batman versus Superman more than I did Rogue One.
Oh, you enjoyed Batman versus Superman more.
Yep. Yeah, it was entertaining in a different kind of way, but I thought Rogue One was good. Did not think it was great or stand out in any particular way.
That's some strong words.
Other than the scenes with Darth Vader, which were, but yeah.
Well, everybody was like blown away by the way that they tied it into A New Hope.
Yeah. It was a safe movie. It was a movie that was good, but safe. It did not stretch itself in any way.
Were you hoping for cursing and nudity, or?
That's what I was, you know, that's what I was promised. I was promised a gritty war movie. I wanted it to be the Battlestar Galactica of Star Wars movies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like you said, it was a good movie, but
yeah.
The reason I saw La La Land a second time is because originally I'd promised my wife I was going to take her to a certain place for dinner and to see the movie. And when the movie came out, it wasn't at that theater. For whatever reason, they weren't showing it at that theater. So I took her to another one because she was like dead set on going to see it. And then after it won all the awards it won for Golden Globes, then, of course, that other theater we were going to go to originally, they're like, hey, we'll start showing it. And she wanted to see it again. So I took her because I'm the greatest husband in the world.
So you went and saw it without her initially?
No. I saw it with her both times.
Okay. Yes. It was a good movie. God, it was magical. It was a magical.
Magical. Look at you.
A magical night at the movies. It was sweet. It was fun. It was. I've been listening to that soundtrack nonstop this week.
Okay, that was. Oh, man, I'm going to lose everybody for doing that right there.
Yep. And there goes half our listenership. We're done.
Damn it.
Pack up shop. We're going home.
By the way, everybody, please support Between the Ropes on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/Between the Ropes and anything you feel comfortable with that you can support Between the Ropes to help us keep going so you can hear us hum tunes or musicals. Please do it there. Just go to patreon.com/Between the Ropes.
It's our lifelong dream to be able to hum musicals on our podcast. So we are going to be revamping some things. We've talked about this. We've got some great stuff in the pipeline to be start rolling out the end of this month, including Patreon subscriber plans. So get on in, and we might have some bonuses coming your way for some cool things. So
let's get to Raw and SmackDown. So on Raw, we did get to see the show debut of Samoa Joe, who was out there in a suit and tie. It was funny that became like a subject, that Samoa Joe is wearing a shirt and tie or a suit and tie. Which I understood from the standpoint that they were trying to make it seem like, you know, he's one of the corporate guys and this is like a big signing and whatnot. I couldn't imagine him coming out there in like a t-shirt and jeans. So it made sense. But I was kind of surprised by just the talk around the subject of what Joe was even wearing. I thought it was a non-subject.
I don't know. I kind of agree with the criticism. I think that it felt off. If you know Joe and you know his character, seeing him in that suit and tie, it didn't feel right. It's kind of like how Kevin Owens initially came out in a suit and they kind of toned that back. Samoa Joe needed to be in street clothes. That's who he is. He's a brawler. He's a fighter. He is not a corporate suit, and it just didn't feel right. Anyway, discussion about it though seemed a little bit heavy handed.
I thought so, but you know, you get Joe out there and, you know, it's great to see him part of Raw, and they put him in his first match immediately that night. They put him in there against Roman Reigns. I was a little bit surprised. I think I was like a lot of people that thought if Joe is going to have this match, he's got to win. And he did win. They did a distraction finish, but in the end of the day, the right guy won. It made a lot of sense for Joe. I don't know exactly what they're going to do with Joe now, because Seth Rollins was going to be his opponent at Fastlane, and he's injured. Now, by the way, they did talk about Seth. So he's got a torn MCL, but the belief right now, the plan looks like they believe he's going to be ready come WrestleMania. You know, whether it takes 6 weeks or 8 weeks for him to rehab, but he will be ready in time for that event and the match with Triple H. However, I don't know what they're going to do with Joe at Fastlane, and I don't know what they're going to do with him at Mania.
Do you think they know yet? Have they figured it out?
I don't know. And that's a big question. I mean, for Mania, I could easily see him just being in Triple H's corner. But I don't know if he'll have a match at Fastlane. Will he have a match at Mania? Could he be in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal? I don't know.
It would be weird to me if they had him debut after the night after Royal Rumble and did not put him in a match until May. That seems like a bit of a stretch.
He's probably have a match, but I don't know if he can be, will he face like a top tier opponent, or will it be more of a, hey, here's Joe and he's a killer and he goes out there and right. He does some squashes.
So here's my deal with all this. So I think it was weird to pair him with Roman Reigns, his first night out. And the reason I say that is because Vince McMahon is so keyed up on keeping Roman Reigns protected that putting him in that situation, and you know Roman Reigns has got to get some offense, did not build up the mystique of Samoa Joe the way I thought it needed to happen. And I think that is bad for his long-term prospects. Not saying he's going to fall off the radar or they're not going to do anything with him, but you can't debut a guy like this who should come out hotter than hell and conquer everybody in the world, but have it be tepid because you put him with the guy that you want to get over. And I think the reaction, I put this on Twitter, the reaction that Samoa Joe got when he first came out was somewhat timid. It was – the fans were like, okay, we see this guy. We don't know what his deal is. That proves what some people have said before. Just because they're in NXT does not mean they're over with the wider WWE audience. Samoa Joe is a legend in his own right. He's not as big as AJ Styles worldwide. But Samoa Joe does have a name. He has recognition from TNA. He came out at the beginning of that show. You know, it was a mild reaction.
I will say the best thing that happened for Joe was that they did put him with Romans from the standpoint that he's not just another guy right now. They're putting him in there against a top guy right off the bat. He's sure. involved in a storyline that involves Triple H, involves sure. McMahon's. So he's in a good position. And I get where you're coming from in that, yes, maybe that first match should have been something where he could be more dominant. But at least he's involved with the upper tier guys. So that means that they do have plans for him. Or he is That's going true. To be involved in a big way. So I kind of look at it from that standpoint. You know, I'm just glad that Seth is going to be healthy enough to do Mania, it sounds like. Now, I don't know if that's going to affect the kind of match that he might have to have, though, because he might be able to get into the ring, but I don't know how good his knee is going to be. Are you going to be timid off of that? Because you're still going to be fresh off an injury. I mean, even if his MCL totally heals by then, it's not going to be like a couple of months after the healing process.
Right. He is still going to be playing it safe to a certain extent because of the fact that he is coming off of an injury. Now, here's what I would guess. The powers that be probably don't care. Vince McMahon probably is not that concerned about whether or not Seth Rollins and Triple H have a five-star match. It's obvious because we keep having Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar in 30-second squash fest, right? So it's probably good enough that they can put this match on the card and advertise it, and the promoter and Vince McMahon says, we're good. It's Mania.
We will get to something when it comes to Kevin Owens and when we get to Bill Goldberg coming up in the question section, because I think there's some people that are already starting to panic a little bit when it comes to that match at Fastlane, to say the least. So one of the things that we saw, and I mentioned, you know, the distraction finish. So it used to, not too long ago, and they still do it to some extent, but like the cheap way WWE would get victories on television would be the roll up from behind. And that's still happening. And it still happens too much. It's not as happening as much as it was, but it's still happening. And now it feels like they're going to another cheap finish that they've done lately. And it's the, hey, we're going to play somebody's music. That's the distraction. And then you get beaten, whether you get hit by a finisher, you get rolled up or whatever. They go on these kicks of like these weird finishes. And I don't get it. I don't like them. I understand every now and then to do a distraction finish or you have somebody else get involved, you know, to cost somebody a match. But these wacky ways or just the roll-ups of doing finishes are overdone, and I think they're unnecessary. And I don't think there's anything wrong with sometimes the guy in the ring cheats or just gets a clean win when I don't think it matters as much. Like, Just do it rather than having to go through all these hoops of these finishes that just you get old so quickly.
Well, and it makes the guys in the ring look real dumb. So a guy like Roman Reigns looks like a complete buffoon because his counterparts have been having the same thing happen for weeks. Seth Rollins, right? His buddy Seth Rollins has been distracted by Triple H's music for weeks. And so to see Roman Reigns fall for that same trap because of Braun Strowman feels cheap. It makes Roman Reigns look dumb. Why couldn't you have had Samoa Joe? He's a bad guy. If you don't want him to win clean, right, I think he should, but I get it. You want to protect Roman. Why couldn't Samoa Joe? Roman gets in a little bit of offense, so Samoa Joe sneaks in a low blow real quick, right? Referee has to turn around for half a second. Samoa Joe knees Roman Reigns in the groin. That gives him the upper hand. There are still ways for heels to get the upper hand without completely sacrificing the integrity of what they're doing.
Oh,
and it feels like it feels like with the distraction, it really does feel like that it doesn't even benefit the heel. The heel is just capitalizing on what somebody else did. The heel needs to take that, like Ric Flair back in the day, right? Poke to the eyes.
There's ways to do it. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with a guy cheating. I mean, in fact, I would encourage it from a standpoint of it really setting the lines between who's a babyface and who's a heel. I mean, right. I know it's a different day and age and they will scream shades of gray. And as long as you get a reaction or whatnot, but I still believe that there needs to be an emotional attachment that is easier to get when people have a rooting interest in somebody or not, or they get mad at somebody for cheating. You know, or maybe somebody cheats and like, man, that's cool. I mean, that's what they ended up doing with Eddie Guerrero. It's just they did it right. In a bit of a comical right. fashion. So I don't have a problem with them doing that. It's just I don't want to think about like, OK, so not that you necessarily need to go through all these thinking machinations that can go on. But I want to go through this process like, OK, who's actually hitting the music back there to distract this person, you know, or, right. You know, I'm not even a big fan of it. Like when somebody does a run in on a match and they play their music and I'm like, if you're doing a run in, shouldn't they just run in? Or right. Like, right. Hey, so-and-so's getting beat down. Here comes so-and-so to save the day. Oh, but we got to play their theme music.
Yeah.
You know, we got to play their entrance video. And I'm like, why? I mean, shouldn't it be a spur of the moment thing? I mean, that production guy must have everything queued up. He must have like a grid. It's sitting right there. They can just push like, oh my God, so-and-so's coming. Hit the music. Hit the video.
You know? Giant buds of all 52, however many WWE superstars. And he just,
they're not medical. Really, oh my God, I can't find it. I can't find it. I can't find it. You know, it's just, you're just thinking that's a process. But I mean, obviously they know who's coming out, but it just,
or like those weeks that Triple H was teasing an entrance and he never came out. Was the guy back there like, I'm going to play it now just to trick him? Or, oh, Triple H told me to play it. Like, it's such a weird thing.
Yeah, it is a weird thing. I will say this, though, man. Raw, for the most part, was a good show. I thought there were some good matches on it. Some of the storylines that they did. I mean, introducing Joe, I thought was strong in the way that Stephanie was behind him. And Mick Foley was pissed about the way that Joe got introduced. Jericho and Owens, more interaction between the two of them, to where Chris Jericho accepted the match from Bill Goldberg at Fastlane for the title. You know, it was the moment we've all been waiting for. Jericho and Goldberg in the ring together. We've been waiting like 2 decades for this. And he accepts the match for his buddy. And then next week, they're going to do the Festival of Friendship. And, you know, Jericho is acting like he's going to have Owens back, you know, at Fastlane, and nothing's going to happen to you, buddy. You know, even Gallows and Anderson against Sheamus and Cesaro, that was a pretty solid match. They did a lot on the show. There was some fun. They had some good matches. So they did a good job overall. And it didn't feel like a show that really dragged a lot.
How did you feel about Bill Goldberg's attire? Because I feel like Bill Goldberg's attire, it looks low rent. That little muscle tee he wears up there every week, I feel like he's going to the beach. He's going to Myrtle Beach, right? Or, you know, I just don't feel like he's going down to Florida. I don't take him seriously as I do when he's wearing that leather jacket. Like, that thing is badass.
Okay, so I will defend Bill from the standpoint. You see him coming out there in that muscle t-shirt, and that dude is sweating buckets already. Imagine him with that damn leather coat on, okay? I mean, I think that he sweats so much that that's what makes him delusional and forget his promos.
Yeah, right.
Okay? So I want him being comfortable and cool as possible so he can remember his lines and can spit them out in a good, concise, timely fashion. And he doesn't have to run through things multiple times.
Okay, so that's helping him with his promos. If that's the argument, I will accept it. Bill Goldberg is allowed to wear his cheap-looking muscle tees all he wants.
You're welcome, Bill. See? Everybody thought that I hate Bill Goldberg. I just had his back right there.
Oh, man.
So SmackDown, they keep doing this, but they keep teasing a feud that can't happen from a standpoint of a match, and that's Daniel Bryan against The Miz. They did it again, and I get why they did it. But I don't know. I'm at a point now where I'm kind of wondering, like, okay, should you really do it to that extent? Because we know that Daniel can't wrestle.
Right. Yeah. Man, it feels like they're still holding out hope in some way that they could be able to sneak Daniel Bryan in here and give him one quick match. The best I can assume is they're teasing this to have Daniel Bryan in some way interfere at WrestleMania and cost The Miz a match, or interfere at some other pay-per-view and cost The Miz something, and that's your payoff. It's kind of like sometimes whenever they tease feuds between managers and wrestlers or boss men, right? Vince McMahon and Stone Cold never really wrestled in an actual match. But it was a feud. They're trying to recreate that. But I agree. It's silly to build this up because the fans are now asking, are we going to see this as a match? It would be a huge seller, but you can't do it, and it feels like a letdown as a fan.
Yeah, that's the only thing I could see them doing is if Miz cost him, or I mean Daniel Bryan cost Miz a match at some point, or even if he was able to like put him in a move, but obviously he can't put himself in a position where something could happen and he ended up taking a bump, you know. Right. And then you know what, and it's not fair to tease it in that manner as well, because then there's an expectation from the audience, and that's not something that they should be teasing people with, because then you're just going to disappoint everybody.
Exactly.
So I guess the biggest thing that got some people bent out of shape on this show was that Baron Corbin pinned AJ Styles in the four-way match that they did. To me, it made a lot of sense that Corbin won that match. And hey, Baron Corbin is getting better and better, and you could see big plans for Corbin. I said this, you know, earlier this year, I think he's going to be the champion on the SmackDown brand by the end of the year. And I think it could happen this summer even.
I think that you look at Baron Corbin and you go over to Raw and you look at Braun Strowman, the two big guys. I think we might have talked about this last week. Which one of those guys wants a championship first? It feels very obvious to me that Baron Corbin is going to be in that position sooner, partially because of the roster on SmackDown, partially because of what he's doing with that advantage, that situation he's been put in. But I could see him being a champion on that brand, on a brand that needs good heels to kind of lead the way. Obviously, you have Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton, who will be going face at some point again in the near future. But he can very easily be a main event heel, maybe not with the whole company, but at least on SmackDown. And so, sure, he goes over in this format situation. It doesn't hurt AJ that much because AJ has been on fire as of late. And it's in a four-way match, so you expect these kinds of crazy things to happen in fatal four ways.
How about that fresh, hot match that they had to end the show? John Cena against Randy Orton, everybody.
Oh, John Cena against Randy Orton. Woo.
They had a good match.
A preview of your WrestleMania main event, right?
That could be your WrestleMania main event. Or not. I can only imagine the revolting that would go on if they did that match again, because it's been done time and time again. I mean, they have good matches. You know, it's funny because they have good matches, but Cena was on Talking Smack and he admitted, like, me and AJ are in the zone. He was like, we are in the zone. And all it did to me was say, damn it, I know we've seen that match several times. Do it again at WrestleMania. Just do it again.
Yep. One more time for all the marbles,
man. Do an Iron Man match. I mean, I know that's been suggested. We talked about it here. I mean, there's different things. I don't care if they do a straight-up match. I don't even care if it's for a title or not. I just want to see those guys have another match.
Can you imagine if they know for a fact, for example, if they know John Cena is not going to be coming back after Mania, he's got to go record his shows or do his little movies or whatever. If they did a loser leaves town match, AJ Styles versus John Cena, the culmination of their feud in an Iron Man match at WrestleMania, or whatever, a steel cage match, whatever stipulation you want to go with, a loser leaves town match, John Cena leaves town for a few months while he's recording his TV shows, pops back up on Raw. How crazy would that be?
You don't even have to do it from a standpoint that Cena would leave town. You could do, Cena puts a title on the line, AJ Styles says he'll be the loser that leaves town, or sure, he'll leave the brand if, you know, and then AJ wins, which everybody would be thrilled about that. I mean, there are different things that you can do to make a stipulation out to make that match make sense again for WrestleMania. And I mean, you could do an Iron Man match, but hell, you don't have to do it because the amount of time that's on that show, give those guys, you know, the 30 or 40 minutes. You can make that work at WrestleMania if you want to. Yep. So, by the way, props to the Ascension. They got a win. They got a win.
Oh, man. I was just thinking about them the other day because I was like, wait, what tag teams are we missing? We haven't heard from the Vaudevillains in quite a while.
By the way, so whenever we see the Ascension's like opening video, you know, you have this, you know, they have the pyramid and whatnot. Tell me if I'm wrong here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Is that video like the same video when they do the transitions on Raw and they show the Raw graphic and they do the zoom in on the A and they like use that as a transition to go to break or so? I swear it's like the same video because it focuses into the A on Raw, which is like a pyramid. And yeah. I'm like, that's freaking Ascension video or vice versa. It's the same damn thing. Every time I see it on
animation.
Raw, every time I see it on Raw, I'm like, oh man, that's a throw to the Ascension.
It's the same animation, but I've always thought their video is supposed to be like a Illuminati reference.
Is
that
what
it is? It's like an Illuminati thing. It's weird.
Just no Tom Hanks. Let's also briefly mention, so they announced the newest members into the Hall of Fame this year, Ricky and Robert, the Rock and Roll Express. And that was one we started to hear rumor about a couple of days prior, but I still necessarily didn't believe it just because it's been talked about for so long that a lot of fans have wondered if it would ever happen. And, you know, these are two guys that obviously have been one of the greatest tag teams of all time, but they had a very, very brief run in WWE. And, you know, their main run, what they're known for in wrestling, was with the NWA and then a little bit with WCW. I mean, and they're still wrestling. I mean, they're 60 and 58, I believe. They're still out there on the indies, but, you know, Ricky and Robert are one of the greatest tag teams of all time. They're ones that so many different people shape their style after. I mean, the Revival have talked about that. Obviously, the Rockers did that as well. And it's just great to see that WWE has said, hey, you know what? I know these guys are barely in our company, but we're going to put them in the Hall of Fame.
I think so, too. It's a name that people have been clamoring for. They have some wrestling legacy. I think that's what makes the WWE Hall of Fame exciting, is that it's not just necessarily the guys that have been in WWE, but it opens it up to so many more possibilities. It feels more like an authentic professional wrestling Hall of Fame, and it just continues to grow with great talent. So guys that deserve it, obviously, this go around, and I'm excited. I'm excited to see them.
Is Ricky Morton?
I'm not excited to see them.
Sure.
I'm excited to see them inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Is Ricky Morton still stuck on the top of the crane from Impact Wrestling when he was on the Hardy compound?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, that's it.
That dude is like 60 years old and he's still got a mullet. He can never get rid of it. It's his trademark hair.
Oh, I mean, yep. That's, I mean, it is, you know,
now, legendary. Well, let me tell you something, youngin', okay? Because I'm going to go into my old man thing here, because I grew up with the Rock and Roll Express, okay? Not only a fantastic tag team, Ricky Morton, one of the greatest baby faces of all time. When you talk about white meat baby face, that is Ricky Morton. My God, did the women love him. Everybody loved it when Ricky was down. Like, Ricky had an awesome feud with Ric Flair as a singles guy as well.
Oh, really?
There was one point where, well, Flair made fun of Ricky Morton because a lot of girls like Ricky. And Flair would always be like, well, the girls are underage. They're like teenagers, you know, because he was just like a heartthrob. So he came out there one time and gave Ricky Morton a training bra. And this is like a big angle, you know, this is a really, really big angle. And Ricky Morton got pissed. They got into a fight, you know, this is on TBS. And, but Ricky Morton's like one of the all time great baby faces, man. You have a tag match and just beat him down, you know, and you get so much sympathy and, you know, and they finally make the hot tag and, you know, between things they did like that, the double team maneuvers, how they, you know, they kind of innovated quick tags to tag in and out all the time because they weren't big guys. The speed that they would use in matches. It was fantastic to see them work, to watch them in their heyday in the mid-80s against the Midnight Express was awesome. See them against the Midnight, see them against Arn and Tully. It was great stuff as well. So it's fantastic seeing them go in. I'm curious to see who's going to be inducting them. I know a lot of people say they would love to see Jim Cornette, as I would. I just don't think that's going to happen.
That relationship is not there, dude.
It's not there. I think if they asked Jim, he would be on his best behavior and he would do it. And he's the right guy. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think we could see like Arn Anderson do it. I think we could see a situation where the New Day could do it like they did last year for the Freebirds, or a current tag team could. But I mean, I'd love to see Corny, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah. Do you actually think Jim Cornette would be on his best behavior?
Oh, absolutely. because he knows it's not about him. It would be about Ricky and Robert.
Yeah.
So that's why. Because he has too much respect for those guys to ruin their moment.
Gotcha.
So
gotcha.
Let's talk about WWE on the network put out the latest, their own documentary, the 24 Dallas, which followed around everybody behind the scenes at WrestleMania last year in Dallas. And WWE does a fantastic job when it comes to these documentaries and seeing everybody behind the scenes. And the thing that I really take away from this is, you know, as fans, obviously we get really worked up and we get really excited, especially for people that don't get to be as close to wrestling as we do. Mm-hmm. And see how excited they are and going to the events. But it's also from the talent standpoint and how excited they are to be a part of an event like this. Is something that they've, you know, dreamed of doing their entire life. For some people, it's the first one. For others, you know, it might be their seventh or eighth, but it never gets old. And just to watch how excited people get, not only fans, but talent, for WrestleMania, it really shows you something about the enormity of the event.
Yeah. You know, once you get to the main stage, once you are a professional wrestler in WWE, NXT is its own thing. You move up to WWE. What is there left to do? To wrestle at WrestleMania. It's special. It's magical. It is huge. It is. There's all the pomp and circumstance. There's all the media. There's all the attention you don't get at the other 25 events a year.
Yeah. You know, and well, see, here's the other thing that, so I say that and that the excitement around it from everybody. It's funny because, so we have been talking, as a lot of other people have, about what we believe is the lineup for WrestleMania coming up this year. And we look at it and say, on paper, it doesn't look that great. It doesn't look that exciting. I mean, it doesn't mean that it's not going to be a good show, that there's not going to be good matches. But when we look at it on paper, it's not what we expected. And there's a lot of questions about it. But then I watch something like this, you know, 24 Dallas, and it kind of makes me change my feelings about WrestleMania, in that it's not that I'm not excited about WrestleMania coming up. It's just, I've kind of put myself in a certain mindset about it. And then I go and I watch something like this and it's almost like, you know, WWE does a little Jedi mind trick on you when it comes to WrestleMania. And I go, but look at how much it means for everybody else. And look how much it means for the talent, and, you know, give it a chance. And, you know, it's WrestleMania. It's a really, really big show. And you see how much happiness it brings to so many people and just the fun that they have and being there and being part of everything that WrestleMania means.
It allows you to stop being such a critic sometimes and just enjoy the moment, because you see what it means to the superstars who are there in that moment.
Yes. And I'm sure I'm going to get crapped on to some extent by going, you damn fanboy. You know, and
you know, internet fanboy smart marks, bro.
Stop drinking the Kool-Aid and whatnot. And, you know, I can have my reservations about a show or an event or what's coming up, but I do at least want to give everything a fair chance. I mean, it's cool to critique after the fact. It's okay to wonder about it in advance, the armchair quarterback, but I don't think you can really go off on something or give a definitive opinion until you actually see it. It's not fair otherwise. Up until that point, it's just, you know, you're just being subjective about it. You're kind of guessing about it. And that's not always fair. I mean, it's to some extent, it's fun to do, but you got to leave yourself open to, okay, what are we actually seeing based on, instead of what I think I'm going to see, or I think the result is going to be. So, you know, and then, and, you know, there's just so much going on when it comes to the WWE product these days and what we see right now. You know, and it goes to our criticisms of Raw and SmackDown. A lot of times with Raw, we sit there and go, oh, you know what? There's some good stuff. There's some bad stuff. But, you know, it's a 3-hour show. Or even like we were talking about before, when it comes to the finishes, like, why are they doing this? Why are they so repetitive? Why do they do this? Why do they do that? They have their reasons for it. I don't have to like everything. But, I mean, think overall, the state of even WWE. I think the state of wrestling overall is really, really good. I think even WWE is good. It's definitely better than it has been, and they've got a lot of talent. The thing that I do wonder about, though, because so there are so many fans today that are smart. It's still, when you look at the WWE audience overall, I mean, I don't know how many people, if you want to put in percentage, maybe 15%, maybe more, maybe a little less when you're talking about them being really smart fans. But even if they're not smart like us, they're smarter than they once were. Okay. Or that they at least, maybe they're not following as close as we are, but they know somebody that is, that might fill them in on something from time to time. And it makes me wonder too, because of that, and because of how smart everybody is and how good the in-ring action has been, especially over the last year or two, not only in WWE, but everywhere, it makes me wonder if WWE should adapt to what they're presenting to the audience to some extent. And that, yes, they're always going to be sports entertainment, but I wonder, should there be more focus than ever before on in-ring action? And I'm not saying that every week they're going to have a 30-minute match, but instead of always having a 5-minute match, could that instead be a 10 to 12 minute match? Could a, you know, 12-minute match on TV now be a 20-minute match on TV? Will the audience enjoy that more, seeing the good in-ring action and seeing, you know, a true winner in these matches, or at least a definitive winner in matches, than they would have in the past? You know, where, yes, I'm, like I said, we're going to see some sports entertainment side of things. We're going to see some promos and whatnot, but maybe you don't have as much as some of that, the riffraff from outside of the ring, and you have a little bit more of the in ring because it has been so good.
I think that's a possibility. You see this a little bit more with promotions like New Japan, where they take the in ring product to the next level. Even some of the indie promotions like Ring of Honor. But I think there's an extra layer on top of that. And I think what that extra layer is making wins and losses spotlighted and making them matter. So I go back to a lot of times to the TNA Bound for Glory series. I dug that because for those couple of months, every match had some weight. Every match had some importance. And that's what fans want. The reason college football is at an all-time high is, number one, because of marketing, but number two, because every week matches determine who's going to be playing in the college football playoffs, right? So you need to make that in-ring product a little bit more expanded, like you're saying, but also give it some weight beyond just championships. Let's have rankings. Let's have some kind of system where we can track wins and losses. That's what the fans are after. They're seeing it in MMA. They're seeing it in the entire sports world. Let's bring that back into professional wrestling.
I'm not saying that it wouldn't affect the ratings, especially right off the bat. And it's not something you can just change overnight. But I think it's something that if you kind of, you made the transition more to that over, you know, a couple of months period of time, and you stuck with it, even if you took a little bit of a hit on the ratings right off the bat, I don't think it would be something where it would be a huge hit. I think it would be negligible, and it's something that you can win the audience back on when they get used to that. But, and plus, if you are delivering good in-ring action that people get excited about, I don't think you're even going to take a hit at all. Like, if you look at the ratings this week for Raw, okay, so we're 2 weeks after the Royal Rumble. The final hour, or was it the final hour? Yeah, the final hour went down a 500,000 viewers. That's a big hit. That's a huge hit. You know, when you're talking about a 500,000, now, I know they don't like to hear this. Well, the audience is tired for 3 hours. Well, yeah, that's the issue. But what's being done to keep people hooked, to stick around for that extra third hour? That's the tough thing. And I just think that if you're giving more in-ring action that people get excited about, that's an easy way to fill time. And I think that's something that a lot of people, especially in today's wrestling environment, as long as you also have a good solid balance of some of the other stuff, but you kind of shift the balance of some of that, I think it could work with today's audience. So we'll get to questions and Elimination Chamber preview here in just a minute. I did want to mention something about Impact Wrestling.
Okay.
That, so now Jeff Jarrett is back there, okay? And he is the executive producer. So it's kind of this redo almost with Impact. And yes, I am calling them Impact because they're no longer the three initials and trying not to use that anymore. So, you know, Dutch Mantel is back. He's on the creative part. You know, Jeff is there. It looks like Scott D'Amore might be involved now as well. Today, they announced a partnership today with Pro Wrestling Noah
in Japan. Yeah, I heard about that. Yep.
So here's the thing that I wonder about, okay? Because they do have some guys, some big names whose contracts are coming up. Jeff Hardy, Matt Hardy, Drew Galloway. All their contracts are up before the end of February. I don't know exactly where anybody is leaning, but I think the common thought, especially when it comes to the Hardys, is that they will stay because the amount of creative control that's believed that they would have because of how well the Broken Matt Hardy character has done, how well Jeff has done in that storyline as well. And that's something that's unique to them. It's something that's totally different, that's kind of caught on. And there's a belief that you're going to have a lot more creative control if you are there than if you go to WWE. WWE, you have a bigger audience. There's a potential to make more money, obviously, but you give up that, you know, creative control. You give up that freedom. But if you have somebody else that's now running the show, and I don't know what Jeff Jarrett thinks of the Hardys or anybody else that's now kind of running the show with Impact, but if their vision is different than what it's been, or maybe they don't want to give up that kind of control, I do wonder what this means for both Matt and Jeff Hardy, because maybe the situation was, hey, you know what? We're likely going to stay because we know we're going to be able to do this or this and this, and we call our shots and we have a certain amount of control. But if now somebody else is, you know, in charge, and maybe they're not going to have that kind of control, or maybe somebody else sees it like, okay, we're going to have you involved, but maybe not to the extent that you were, maybe that opens the door for them more to say, you know what? Maybe we will go to WWE, because if we're not going to have the same kind of control that we have now, or we think we're going to have,
right,
then we might as well go back to WWE.
It's always a guessing game when you get egos involved like this. Jeff Jarrett's got his own agenda. He's got his own ego. Everybody at Anthem has got their own agenda to promote here with the new Impact. So who knows? I do think it is likely that if they lost some of that creative freedom, they would see it as time to go back to WWE for one more run. I think that is a possibility this day and age. I think WWE would love to have them. I don't think we're there yet. I think we're at least 6 months away from something big like that happening. I think the earliest you might would see them would be come back next year at Royal Rumble. But, you know, who knows? The wrestling industry is a funny thing.
Well, if they jump, I mean, it would be soon. I think it would be very, very soon. It wouldn't be before WrestleMania. It would be right after.
Yeah.
The thing that I would be very curious about, though, is how would the WWE audience react to Broken Matt Hardy? To me, there would have to be a lot of vignettes. There would have to be a lot of prep done to explain this, because there are going to be some people, and probably a vocal minority, a very vocal minority, that would be ecstatic about seeing them in that ring. But then there's going to be other people that go, who the hell is that? Or they're going to be like, what happened to Matt Hardy? You know, they're not going to know the lineage. They're not going to know the story. It would give an opportunity to retell the story on that stage. But the question then is, who has creative control, and what Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy's vision might be different than Vince McMahon's vision.
Right.
And that's the question you get into there. So it's just something, I mean, I don't know this when it comes to Jeff Jarrett, and I don't know about what the Hardys and they're thinking on where they're going to go. It's just something I wanted to throw out there, because now that Jeff is back and he's the executive producer, he's not in charge of the whole thing, but he obviously has a big stake in it.
Right.
And Dutch Mantel is now, I think he's a huge part of creative. I don't know if he's in charge of the creative department, but he's definitely has a big say in it. But there's personnel that have changed in the landscape of Impact Wrestling. And I just wonder how that could affect the Hardys and maybe even Drew Galloway.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what's going to happen with all this. It's a new time for Impact. But you also have to think that everybody else in the industry is keeping their eyes on that and New Japan. And it's going to be an interesting year. It's going to be curious.
You know who has the answer to it?
Who?
The Impact Owl. The Impact Owl has answers to everything.
That logo is terrible.
It's also hideous.
If you look at it, you'll notice that when on the one side, if you're facing it, the left-hand side,
okay,
where the feathers should come down behind the words, it's blocked off. They didn't put the feathers all the way through. It was amateur hour at the Anthem logo design.
Bringing it up right now. By the way, that website that they have, still awful. They still have not changed it. It drives me nuts. I'm like, come on, man, you got to change that website. So, all right, let's get to some questions. Everybody some can questions. Hit us up. You can find us on Twitter. It's Ask BTR. That's where you send the questions. Or you can really screw up, Mike, and just tweet us at Between the Ropes.
Jesus, please don't tweet me directly. You're going to send me lots of things.
You can go to our Facebook page as well. It's facebook.com/Between the Ropes. We have a post up there where you can leave questions as well. So let's get into it.
So I'm going to kick this off as we kick off a lot of questions with Francis. Francis sent us about 15 questions. Go figure.
Of course.
Francis Reyes writes in, though we're going to stick with this one tonight. If Nikki Bella takes a break from the WWE after Mania, do you think we will see her do more Total Divas and Total Bellas?
Yes, because she's now an executive producer for Total Divas. So she is going to be more involved. Now, there's even some belief that maybe she's not just taking a break, but she could be retiring come WrestleMania.
It makes sense to me at this point. She definitely wants to move more into the vein of reality TV or producing some shows like that. I think that's where she winds up. I think she is not long for the WWE world as an in-ring competitor. Moving right along, because we're going to be rapid fire tonight, Fritzy. We got lots of things to get to still. Bang, bang, boom. Jonathan Branch with an O in Jonathan writes in, they're not actually going to have Goldberg win the Universal title, right?
This brings me back to what I brought up before, where some people are getting their panties in a wad. Kevin Owens and Bill Goldberg, they're going to be vying for the Universal title at Fastlane. Not only is Goldberg going to beat Kevin Owens to win that title, he's going to beat him in under 2 minutes.
So here's a follow-up question to that, because yes, it is the belief, and I think this is going to happen. Goldberg wins the title in just a few weeks. Stephen Minahane writes in, do ye think Goldberg wins the title against Owens in a squash match, and is there any resentment backstage over this?
There's no resentment, because Kevin knows it's a business. He understands the character that they're doing with Goldberg, and he's just probably thrilled to be in the ring with Bill as well. No, I don't think there is any resentment. And it makes sense for Bill to win in this fashion, because he beat Lesnar. He beat the monster in under 90 seconds. I think that he will beat Kevin very quickly. And I could also see something where Jericho immediately tries to help. It backfires and Goldberg spears him, jackhammers him, and wins the championship.
It's going to be curious to see what happens. I there will be no resentment. Owens is just excited to get in the ring with Goldberg.
Do you think it'll be under 2 minutes?
I think it's got to be. I am surprised by that, but they're going to have another squash match. You don't have Owens get offense when Lesnar did not initially. So, Steven had one more question for us.
Too much drinking already.
Yeah, I tell you what, I'm already.
It's that 5.5% alcohol.
Lightweight over here. A combined tag division is awesome. Split waters it down. Which show gets tag title match on Mania, and which is on the pre-show?
Well,
They're both in the pre-show.
Yeah, they both could end up on the pre-show. If there was one that was going to be on, I would think Raw might have a chance of being on the regular show, but I think they're both on the pre-show.
We've got two more questions here. I want to jump to. We have a lot of questions coming this week. So Slippy and Grand Lawati, we're going to have to post y'all's until next week. But I do want to get to these two really quick. I think they're good. Danny Hernandez writes in, are you getting pay-per-view fatigue?
Yes. I almost didn't realize that the Elimination Chamber was coming up this Sunday. For some reason, like when they were talking about this, it was like, because they mentioned it on Raw, and I go, oh, that's right. And what ticks me off too is that I want to watch it, but you know what else I want to watch?
The Walking Dead.
You're damn right. I'm going to watch The Walking Dead. I'm going to watch like an hour of Elimination Chamber. I'm going to watch Walking Dead, and then I'll watch the rest of the chamber.
It's too much. It is. It's way too much. I like the fact that we have some brand exclusive pay-per-views, but I hate that I am not as excited about them anymore because we have so many and they don't have time to advertise them or build up new storylines. So that's kind of we had a lot of questions come in this week. We appreciate it. Please keep asking us those questions. We got one more before we go off. That is #AskBTR. The William Adama, he is our friend Will, who used to write some for the site. Will, please reach out to us so we can do some more stuff together. He wrote in, what are your thoughts on Mike Adamley, his dementia and possible CTE diagnosis?
I haven't watched the video interview yet, but just seeing the headline, it's a really sad thing. So Mike Adamley has been a regular broadcaster up in the Chicago area for a long time. He did American Gladiators broadcasting. Before that, he did play football. He played in the NFL. It's a sad story to hear about that he even knows this. I mean, I think, how old is Adam? Mike Adamley, he's what, 56, I think?
Yeah, he's at his late 50s. Yeah.
So to get diagnosed that he has dementia and know that that's going to be coming, that's a tough pill to swallow. So all the best to Mike, and I hope he's doing well and he can attack this as best as possible. Same with his family. That is a extremely tough diagnosis and something I would never wish on anybody.
It is. It's tough. I'm happy to see him taking such a positive attitude and such a good stride. But it's tough. He said he'd do it again if he had the chance. We made fun of him in the WWE because he would flub lines sometimes and mess up. Those were probably some early warning signs.
Did he call him Mike Hardy instead of Jeff Hardy?
Yeah, it was Mike Hardy. Yeah, there was a few instances here and there.
Yeah, so. There was a couple, unfortunately. Yeah, he didn't last too long there, but
that's hashtag AskBTR on Twitter. We will get to more questions next week. Don't you worry. But I wanted to leave time for predictions if we can hit those.
Yeah, man. We got the Elimination Chamber, like we said. So we got to give some predictions. Believe it or not, and I wondered about this because they got six people, obviously, in the Chambers match itself. I was wondering how they put together a full card considering the brand split and this is SmackDown. But they have found a way to put together a full seven matches for the Elimination Chamber on Sunday. Uh-huh. Let's run them down. And I think the predictions should be pretty easy.
Let's run them down. Let's make them sound real terrible. Go ahead.
Luke Harper against Randy Orton. Damn you, Randy. You broke up the family. And Luke is pissed. And now he's going to eat an RKO and get pinned.
Randy's going to eat one? Oh, Luke's going to eat one. Yeah.
Luke is going to eat one.
Randy Orton wins. Let it be known that the last pay-per-view... Well, never mind. Okay, yeah. Luke loses. Randy wins.
What were you going to say about the last pay-per-view, that I beat you in predictions or something?
No, I beat you in predictions.
What?
The last pay-per-view.
How did that happen?
I got more right the last
That's
pay-per-view.
That's garbage. We need a recount. Recount. I think you only won the electoral vote.
Oh, yeah.
Dolph Ziggler in a handicap match taking on both Apollo Crews and Kalisto.
Ziggs. Ziggy, zig, zig, zigs.
I am going to say that Ziggs loses.
Hmm.
I think they're going to do this thing where he continues to be a heel and be pissed off, but he goes on a losing streak as well. Okay. Becky Lynch against Mickie James.
Becky Lynch, she needs a win. She is behind the times right now. So
I'm going to say Mickie James wins here.
Oh, okay.
I like Mickie. I'm still waiting for
her.
Do you think Mickie James will break out the Pocahontas outfit anytime soon?
I doubt it.
No? No Pocahontas?
Doubtful. That's a negatory there, Fritzy.
Man. Alexa Bliss against Naomi for the SmackDown Women's Championship.
Alexa Bliss.
Alexa Bliss, yes. Tag Team Turmoil for the Tag Team Championship. American Alpha, Heath Slater and Rhino. Usos, Vaudevillains, Ascension, and Brizango. American Alpha.
Vaudevillains. American Alpha.
You can't even name the Vaudevillains. Can you?
Yeah, there's Vaud and there's Villain.
Come on. Simon Gotch?
Yeah, Simon Gotch.
Aiden English?
And Garfunkel. Simon and Garfunkel.
Come on. Name the Aiden two members English. Of the Ascension.
Yeah, Mad Max and Maiden Max.
Connor and Victor?
Mad Max and Nice Max.
Both with a K?
Yep. Woe with a K. Connor and Max.
Okay. Nikki Bella against Natalia. I'll take Nikki. Bella. Yeah, Nikki.
Nikki.
And then the Elimination Chamber. Johnny Boots and Tights, AJ Styles, Dean Ambrose, The Miz, Baron Corbin, and Bray Wyatt.
The Miz all day, every day. No, I'm sorry. Probably going to be Bray Wyatt.
I'm going to say Bray Wyatt as well. And I know that's kind of the obvious choice, and where
that's
we think
an
we're
insider
going.
Pick is what that is.
Yeah, but I mean, we it goes the same thing where they had Orton win at the Rumble, and now we believe that Bray Wyatt is going to be getting the championship here and facing Orton at WrestleMania.
But wouldn't the Miz have been a great champion here? Wouldn't he have been fantastic? Wouldn't that have been amazing?
He's already got plans, man. Mixed tag match, him and John Cena, rehashing that WrestleMania main event from years ago. But they're both going to have their women involved, too.
There you go. Add women makes everything better.
That is true. But a mixed tag match involving John Cena and The Miz at WrestleMania. I want Cena against AJ Styles again, man.
Yep.
I mean, I don't care. I mean, I've loved the work that The Miz has done this year. I think that he should get a championship run sometime in 2017. Even if they did a singles match between the two, I guess that would be pretty good at Mania. But to me, still the match right now is Cena and Styles just because they're working magic.
Right.
It's magic. And I know that even goes against some ideas of, hey, man, they already had a blow-off match and whatnot. WrestleMania is the place to have blow-offs to feuds. That is the landscape. That is the event to do that. That's what it used to be. That's what it should be. And yeah. I think you can figure out a way to put together one more epic match between John Cena and AJ Styles.
You're really pleading your case. You're hoping those WWE representatives are listening right now.
Oh, you haven't heard them clicking in and off on the line?
Oh, that's Donald Trump. So
No. I'm going to hide my camera over here. Stop looking. is that why the green light's on my camera? I was wondering what that was about.
That is.
I guess I should put my pants back on. thanks, everybody, for listening to the podcast. We appreciate it. Please keep sending us questions. Use the hashtag AskBTR, and we'll be putting up a post on the Facebook page as well to where you can leave your questions there. Again, if you can support us on Patreon, please do that. It's patreon.com/betweentheropes. Go to iTunes, rate, and review the podcast. We love stars. We need stars. We need reviews. So please do that. And you can also find us on Stitcher. We're on Google Play. We're on SoundCloud. We're on the TuneIn app as well. There's plenty of places that you can find the Between the Ropes podcast. If you can help spread the word, that would be great as well. So thanks again, everybody. For Michael Wiseman, I'm Brian Fritz. We will talk to you next time right here, Between the Ropes.